It's January 28th, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 21:16 hours Eastern Standard Time. Ward Green with you again today. And Chapter 6, Paragraph 2 is our Crucible article. Chapter today, little ones, and we've got some medium-sized readings today from the Word of God, of course, which is 2 Kings 12, Ezekiel 36, and we have Luke, some more from chapter 1, which I'd like to do today. And in chapter 6, paragraph 2 of the Crucible article, we read there, little children, our understanding changes, but our chronology stands fast, and the chronology itself is what intimates many a detail. It is for the very reason that we place the birth of Moses at 1572 BCE that we find it to be also when Apophis ruled. Egyptian chronology is determined by factors which fairly mysteriously or remotely do depend upon Bible chronology. In God's eye, of course, all events are interdependent, so that different methods ideally should agree. But when they do get the same result, it is only by the hand of Jehovah. Egyptian chronology dates Apophis contemporary with Moses. When we look for Moses at the right time in Egypt, we will find that the evidence becomes ever stronger and stronger. There is notably an Ethiopian record of Moses in Egypt. As for Moses, we will preview his story at a later time. The Ethiopian record is a separate story or separate account. It doesn't bear directly on the chronology that we determine from the Egyptian chronology. And that's the end of our reading for today from the Crucible article. And there's some curious statements here. It's interesting because we find Moses born in 1572 that we find it to be also when Apophis ruled. That doesn't seem to be a strictly correct statement, except that the two are connected because Jehovah knows whether or not they should be connected. I mean, that's the thing. Whether they should be connected is not for us to decide, but it really, when I did this research and when I wrote this article, I didn't know who the Pharaoh was at the time of the birth of Moses. I had no idea. I just discovered that his name was very likely Apophis during the research that I did, based on the chronology when Moses was born in the genealogy and when Apophis ruled in Egyptian chronology. They just coincided. And so, but when we look at it, it seems truer and truer within the context of the articles that I've written so far. Ecclesiastes chapter 8, little children, verse 1, who is there like the wise one, and who is there knowing the interpretation of a thing? The wisdom of a man itself causes his face to shine, and even the sternness of his face is changed for the better. And today's reading from 2 Kings 12. Now this is important. In the seventh year of Jehu, Jehoash became king. And for 40 years he reigned in Jerusalem. We already read that Jehoash reigned for 40 years, I think. Or did we? Maybe not. No, we knew he was 7 years old when he began to reign. was the seventh year of Jehu. It says here, but I want to show you something. In the table of the chronology of Moses, part 2, table H3 in Moses part 2, that article, by yours truly also, so we have this table where Jehu began to rule here in 887 for 28 years. But if Jehoram had reigned for 12 years from 898, which would be 2 years after 900, when Ahaziah ruled for 2 years. Now, some of the kings of Israel, it appeared, were ruling for a period of years which was one greater than the actual difference in the dates, so that the years appeared to be inclusive. So that was also taken to be the time for these kings, but for Ahaziah, but not for Jehoram. Jehoram was taken as ruling 12 years as a difference between. But now Jehoram, he could have been taken to a rule from 898 to 887 with the years being inclusive. And if we'd done that, then, of course, Ahaziah would not have been inclusive. He would have been from 900 to 898. These things are possible, though, because we don't understand enough about it. But we want Jehu in 887. I believe that's true because of some other reason. The 18th year of Shalmaneser III, there's some kind of offering made by a king of Israel whom we believe was Jehu, and that's why we put him in 887. And in our chronology, Shalmaneser year 18 is 887. That's why we had to have that. That's why I think it came out this way. But when we see there was an eclipse February 9th, 784, and that I think might be a typo. And also, I just clicked on something that is not available, which I need to fix possibly also on the website. But when we look at this, time period 785, if we had instead of 785 we had 784, then we could say 784 back to 825. Excuse me, I almost sneezed. Then we have 825 back to 16 years earlier, 841, and 17 years earlier than that is 858, and then Jehu would begin to rule in 886, which would have worked out better for the eclipse in 784. So, but there's a bit of a problem with the chronology, because we want Jehu to begin ruling in 887, because he's believed to be the one who made the offering to the tribute to Shalmaneser III. That's why we have all that the way it is exactly there. And we're not wrong by more than 1 year, if we're wrong at all, it appears, so it's not too bad. But in the seventh year of Jehu, Jehoash became king. There's a problem with that, because 7 years after 887 is 880, and Jehoash began to rule in 879, which looks like the eighth year of Jehu. So there does appear to be a problem, but it's not a big problem in the largeness of the numbers. But perhaps the seventh year of Jehu can be taken to be the eighth year of Jehu also, because that is what typically did happen in many cases in the Hebrew language. When the ordinal was used, seventh, eighth, fourth, fifth, third, those ordinal numbers could have been interpreted, or often could be interpreted, as meaning one more, or the same number cardinal, so that 3 years and some months could be called the third year, for example. So, but anyway, we do have some problems not with our chronology, but with the accounts and our understanding of the accounts and how to get them arranged in any kind of chronology. That's the problem. And that's why it's so interesting to read the book of 2 Kings. And Jehoash ruled for 40 years, and his mother's name was Zibiah from Beersheba. And Jehoash continued doing what was right in Jehovah's eyes all the days of his that Jehoiada the priest instructed him. It was only that the high places did not disappear. The people were still sacrificing and making sacrificial smoke on the high places. And Jehoash proceeded to say to the priests, all the money for the holy offerings that is brought to the house of Jehovah, the money at which each one is assessed, the money for the souls, according to individual valuation, all the money that it comes up on the heart of each one to bring to the house of Jehovah, let the priests take for themselves, each one from his acquaintance, and let them for their part repair the cracks of the house wherever any crack is found. And it came about that by the 23rd year of King Jehoash, the priests had not yet repaired the cracks of the house. So King Jehoash called Jehoiada the priest, and the priests said to them, why is it that you are not repairing the cracks of the house? Now then, do not take any more money from your acquaintances, but for the cracks of the house you should give it. At that the priests consented not to take any more money from the people and not to repair the cracks of the house. In other words, they were to take money and repair the cracks. Jehoiada the priest now took a chest and bored a hole in its lid and put it beside the altar on the right as a person comes into the house of Jehovah. And there the priests, the doorkeepers, put all the money that was being brought into the house of Jehovah. And it came about that as soon as they saw that there was a great deal of money in the chest, the secretary of the king and the high priest would come up and they would bind it up and count the money that was being found at the house of Jehovah. And they gave the money that had been counted off over to the hands of the doers of the work that were appointed to the house of Jehovah. In turn, they paid it out to the workers in wood and to the builders that were working at the house of Jehovah, and to the masons and to the hewers of stone, and to buy timbers and hewn stones for repairing the cracks of the house of Jehovah, and for all that was expended upon the house to repair it. Only as respects the house of Jehovah, there were not made basins of silver, extinguishers, bowls, trumpets, any sort of gold article and article of silver from the money that was being brought to the house of Jehovah, for it was to the doers of the work that they would give it, and with it they repaired the house of Jehovah. And they would not call for an accounting with the men into whose hand they would give the money to give to the doers of the work, because it was with faithfulness that they were working. As for the money for guilt offerings and the money for sin offerings, it was not being brought to the house of Jehovah, so it came to belong to the priests. Then it was that Hazael, the king of Syria, proceeded to go up and fight against Gath and capture it, after which Hazael set his face to go up against Jerusalem. At that, Jehoash, the king of Judah, took all the holy offerings that Jehoshaphat and Jehoram, these were the kings of Judah previously, and Ahaziah, his forefathers, the kings of Judah, had sanctified, and his own holy offerings and all the gold to be found in the treasures of the house of Jehovah and the house of the king, and sent them to Hazael, the king of Syria. So he withdrew from against Jerusalem. He bribed him. As for the rest of the affairs of Jehoash and all that he did, are they not written in the book of the affairs of the days of the kings of Judah? However, his servants rose up and leagued together in a conspiracy and struck Jehoash down at the house of the mound on the way that goes down to Silla. And Josachar, the son of Shimeath, and Jehozabad, the son of Shomer, his servants, were the ones that struck him down so that he died. Accordingly, they buried him with his forefathers in the city of David. And Amaziah, his son, began to reign in place of him. So we see how good the chronology is. It's not that we can be, it's not wrong at all, necessarily. It's just that the calendar system that's being used may account for the difference, because, for example, there's the secular Jewish year and the year that begins in Nisan, which are two different years. And there's the Hebrew language, which sometimes can cause seeming discrepancies, but we've got the chronology. Jehoash ruled from 879 BCE in the genealogy until 839 BCE, as we have shown in the article Moses, 879 to 839, Jehoash, 40 years, 2 Kings 12 and 1. There he is. The Jewish year would be 2882 for his year 1, and he ruled until 2922 in the Jewish calendar system. Now, Ezekiel chapter 36. Ezekiel writes, "And as for you, O son of man, prophesy concerning the mountains of Israel, and you must say, O mountains of Israel, hear the word of Jehovah. This is what the sovereign Lord Jehovah has said. For the reason that the enemy has said against you, aha, even the high places of old time, as a possession, it has become ours. Therefore, prophesy, and you must say, this is what the sovereign Lord Jehovah has said. For the reason, even for the reason that there has been a lying desolate and a snapping at you from all sides, in order for you to become a possession to the remaining ones of the nations, and you continue being talked about with the tongue, and there is a bad report among people. Therefore, O mountains of Israel, hear the word of the sovereign Lord Jehovah. This is what the sovereign Lord Jehovah has said to the mountains and to the hills, to the stream beds and to the valleys and to the devastated places that were laid desolate, and to the abandoned cities that have come to be for plunder and for ridicule, to the remaining ones of the nations that are round about. Therefore, this is what the sovereign Lord Jehovah has said. Certainly, in the fire of my zeal, I will speak against the remaining ones of the nations, and against Edom, all of it, those who have given my land to themselves as a possession, with the rejoicing of all the heart, with scorn in the soul for the sake of its pasture ground and for the plunder. Therefore prophesy concerning the soil of Israel, and you must say to the mountains and to the hills, to the stream beds and to the valleys, this is what the sovereign Lord Jehovah has said. Look, I myself in my zeal and in my rage must speak, for the reason that humiliation by nations is what you have borne." This is a fascinating, fascinating thing that we see explained here. Therefore, this is what the sovereign Lord Jehovah has said. I myself have raised my hand in an oath that the nations that you have round about, they themselves will bear their own humiliation. And you yourselves, O mountains of Israel, will give forth your very own boughs and bear your own fruitage for my people Israel. For they have drawn near to the point of coming in. For here I am in favor of you, and I shall certainly turn toward you, and you will actually be cultivated and sown with seed. Very itchy nose. And I will multiply upon you humankind, the whole house of Israel, all of it. And cities must become inhabited, and the devastated places themselves will be rebuilt. Yes. I will multiply upon you humankind and animal kind, and they will certainly multiply and become fruitful. And I shall actually cause you to be inhabited as in your former condition. And I will do more good than in your initial state. And you will have to know that I am Jehovah. And upon you I will cause humankind to walk, even my people Israel. And they must take possession of you, and you must become an hereditary possession to them. And you will not bereave them again of any more children. This is what the Sovereign Lord Jehovah has said. For the reason that there are those saying to you, a devourer of humankind is what you yourself are, and a land bereaving your nations of children is what you have become, therefore humankind you will no more devour, and your nations you will no more bereave of children, is the utterance of the Sovereign Lord Jehovah. And I shall cause no further humiliating talk by the nations to be heard concerning you, and reproach by peoples you will bear no more, and your nations you will no more cause to stumble, is the utterance of the Sovereign Lord Jehovah. He's speaking about the land, the nations belonging to the land of Israel. And the word of Jehovah continued to occur to me, saying, Son of man, the house of Israel were dwelling upon their soil, and they kept making it unclean with their way and with their dealings. Like the uncleanness of menstruation, their way has become before me. And I proceeded to pour out my rage upon them on account of the blood that they had poured out upon the land, which land they had made unclean with their dungy idols. And I proceeded to scatter them among the nations so that they were dispersed among the lands according to their way and according to their dealings. I judged them. So they came into the nations where they came in, and people proceeded to profane my holy name in saying with reference to them, these are the people of Jehovah, and from his land they have gone out. What an embarrassment for Jehovah's people to be cast out, exiled from their own land. And yet Jehovah allowed that to happen. It's an embarrassment to Jehovah. And I, Jehovah continues, shall have compassion on my holy name, which the house of Israel have profaned among the nations where they have come in. So they didn't profane it by using Jehovah's name in a bad way. They profaned it by having been simply brought into those other nations and taken away from their homeland. That's the way in which Israel profaned Jehovah's name, just because they were taken captives. They were taken captive and brought into exile. Therefore, say to the house of Israel, Jehovah continues, this is what the Sovereign Lord Jehovah has said. Not for your sakes am I doing it, O house of Israel, but for my holy name, which you have profaned among the nations where you have come in. And I shall certainly sanctify my great name, which is being profaned among the nations which you profaned in the midst of them. And the nations will have to know that I am Jehovah, is the utterance of the Sovereign Lord Jehovah, when I am sanctified among you before their eyes. And I will take you out of the nations and collect you together out of all the lands and bring you in upon your soil. And I will sprinkle upon you clean water, and you will become clean from all your impurities and from all your dungy idols. I shall cleanse you. And I will give you a new heart, and a new spirit I shall put inside you. And I will take away the heart of stone from your flesh, and give you a heart of flesh. And my spirit I shall put inside you. And I will act so that in my regulations you will walk, and my judicial decisions you will keep and actually carry out. And you will certainly dwell in the land that I gave to your forefathers, and you must become my people. And I myself shall become your God. And I will save you from all your impurities and call to the grain and make it abound. And I shall put upon you no famine. And I shall certainly make the fruitage of the tree abound and the produce of the field, in order that you may no more receive among the nations the reproach of famine. and you will be bound to remember your bad ways and your dealings that were not good, and you will be bound to feel a loathing at your own person on account of your errors and on account of your detestable things. Not for your sakes am I doing this, is the utterance of the Sovereign Lord Jehovah. Let it be known to you. Be ashamed and feel humiliation because of your ways, O house of Israel. This is what the Sovereign Lord Jehovah has said. In the day of my cleansing you from all your errors, I will also cause the cities to be inhabited, and the devastated places must be rebuilt, and the desolated land itself will be cultivated, whereas it had become a desolate waste before the eyes of every passerby. And people will certainly say, that land yonder, which was laid desolate, has become like the Garden of Eden. And the cities that were a waste, and that were laid desolate, and that were torn down, are fortified. They have become inhabited. And the nations that will be left remaining round about you will have to know that I myself, Jehovah, have built the things torn down. I have planted what has been laid desolate. I myself, Jehovah, have spoken, and I have done it. This is what the Sovereign Lord Jehovah has said. This is what I shall yet let myself be searched for by the house of Israel to do for them. I shall multiply them like a flock with men, like a flock of holy persons, like the flock of Jerusalem in her festal seasons. Thus the cities that had been a waste will become full of a flock of men, and people will have to know that I am Jehovah. That concludes Ezekiel 36, today's Ezekiel reading. Luke chapter 1, for the time remaining, we'd read up to verse 25. This is the way Jehovah has dealt with me in these days when he has given me his attention to take away my reproach among men, Elizabeth said. But if we look at the previous verse, verse 24, we see, after these days, it says. Now, the statement after these days can apply to Elizabeth becoming pregnant, but we interpreted it differently. We said, no, it's after these days when Zechariah was told that she would give birth. After those days, he became aware that she was pregnant at that point, and she'd already kept herself secluded for 5 months. And she'd not told her husband yet that she was pregnant. That's the way that we interpreted this. Because that's one way to interpret it. But also it says, after these days, in verse 24, and then in verse 26 it says, in her sixth month. Elizabeth's sixth month, the angel Gabriel was sent forth from God to a city of Galilee named Nazareth to a virgin promised in marriage to a man named Joseph of David's house, and the name of the virgin was Mary. So it was after these things also that Mary became aware that she was to become pregnant. So the after these days applies to this sixth month occurred, right? It's not necessary for us to interpret it as being that the beginning of the pregnancy of Elizabeth began after these days. That's not necessary because it says she kept herself secluded for 5 months, you see. And if they had told us she was pregnant already before the story of Zechariah was told, where he met the angel in the temple, that would have been spoiling the story, so it would have been giving away too much too soon in the story. So the fact that they withheld the fact she was already pregnant until after the account about Zechariah makes perfect sense, does it not? And then, so they didn't tell us she was already pregnant when he was in the temple with the angel. But it still says she became pregnant, of course, in his eyes after those days, because he didn't know she was pregnant. So if he were telling the story, it would seem to him that she became pregnant after those days if he didn't know about it prior. So it all makes better sense with this interpretation, it appears, does it not? Now, in verse 28, when Gabriel went in before Mary, he said, "Good day, highly favored one, Jehovah is with you." But she was deeply disturbed at the saying. This is in the sixth month of Elizabeth's pregnancy. And Mary began to reason out what sort of greeting this might be. So the angel said to her, "Have no fear, Mary, for you have found favor with God. And look, you will conceive in your womb and give birth to a son." So you see, here the conception is talked about, whereas in the previous account of the story of Zechariah and the angel, the birth was talked about, but not the conception, which leads us to logically arrive at the conclusion that she was already pregnant at the time that Zechariah was given the information. Where the angel said in verse 17 or 16, where is it? 15, 14, 13. Elizabeth will become mother. Elizabeth will become mother to a son. It doesn't mention the conception. It says your supplication has been favorably heard. The angel could have said she's going to conceive. But if she's already conceived, then that wouldn't have been appropriate. The angel said she will become mother to a son. The other thing is, Zechariah was to remain mute and be unable to speak. Until those things had taken place where the child would be born. And this is also the angel Gabriel. So, if Zechariah was to be mute for 9 months, that's a lot more difficult than to be mute for 3 months. So it's another reason to interpret it that way. But Mary, having been told by Gabriel that she was highly favored, she was disturbed by that. Then she was told she was going to conceive a child. And in verse 32, "This one will be great and will be called Son of the Most High. And Jehovah God will give him the throne of David, his father." And that was to be the Messiah. But the conception was to be by Holy Spirit. In verse 35, "Holy Spirit will come upon you." So she wasn't going to get pregnant in the usual way. It was going to be a miraculous conception, an immaculate conception. So that's the end of today's study for today. It's January 28th, 2024 of the Common Era, and the time is 21:49 hours Eastern Standard Time. I'm Ward Green. I love you very much. It's been wonderful to be with you. I hope you have a wonderful day. In my behalf, this is Liv Dusty, and this is Cassie, saying bye for now.